You're listening to It's Confirmed with Tomiko Torres, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, happy Tuesday to you all. Once again, we're back. We're celebrating the recognition of Domestic Violence Month. Got some good things in store for you today. Have a special guest coming on today. His name is Ed, and that's his government name. He didn't want to have an alias because he wants people to know, like, this is who I am. I tell my story. Interesting when I heard this story. I think that all men, because I'm not going to separate it by color, because domestic violence runs, you know, through every race, every nationality. So I'm not going to separate it by, you know, one distinctive race. But every man should be listening in today, especially to this session, because this session is really deep. I was just privy to a phone call of a gentleman, and basically the verbiage that he was using to his children was kind of like, you know, possible victim himself of domestic violence, you know, at some point in time in his life. And hopefully one day he'll come on the show to share a little bit about, you know, what he's been through, because I was just trying to get the concept of the verbiage, you know, and how you speak to not only just your kid today, but it could be towards anyone in general. And it's very important, you know, verbiage. We keep the verbiage to a minimum of being nice. You know, it costs you nothing to be nice. Sometimes the way you say things may come out wrong. And I get it, because sometimes we all read the lines across the screen in our forebrain that says, you know, this is what you're supposed to say. But when you take a pause and you analyze it first and you say, listen, that just doesn't sound right. Maybe I should change the way I'm going to say this. Because usually, depending on the individual, the way you present the conversation to them, it may alter their personality to something or someone else. So that could be the case in a lot of domestic situations today. You know, and there are quite a few domestic situations today ongoing. I mean, I'm reading this stuff day in, day out on the news. It's overwhelming, you know, on how people handle situations, especially infidelities in a relationship that can lead to a really bad situation, or, you know, someone who in their mind thinking you're together with them and in actuality, you're not with them. You're just friendly with them. And for whatever their reasons are for thinking otherwise, it could put someone in a bad position to try to have, you know, a form of defense to say, this is not what it was supposed to be. We were supposed to be just friends. Or it could be your kid. You know, there was a situation where this young man had killed his mother. I believe it was in Atlanta, Georgia. As a matter of fact, she was a singer. She was a blues singer. And her tone to her son triggered something in him, and he actually murdered his mother. You know, and this was a recent story, by the way. You know, and it's the tone that you give off that can trigger someone into doing things that they don't want to do or want to say. So we have to be very mindful going forward. And with Ed coming on, I hope that people can be very mindful of, you know, words and your choice of words. Because as a child growing up, not myself, but children growing up in general, you know, you say bad things to them, such as you're a failure, you know, you're no good, you're always going to be nothing. These words will live with these children forever. And then they will grow up to say the same words to their children. They will have repetitive behavior when it comes to saying things. And you have to be mindful. Children, you know, the brains take time to develop. So these things sit in the back of their mind, whereas You know, I remember my mom said I wasn't going to be anything, or my dad said I'm never going to amount to anything. My mom said I was lazy because I'm just like my dad. You know, sometimes parents have the situation of pointing the finger when it's not supposed to be pointed, you know. So Al Green says when you point the finger, you're actually pointing it at yourself. If you actually do that like a trigger hand, you'll see that the forefinger is pointing at that person, the thumb is pointing back at you. So this could be a ricochet event that takes place when you're saying mean, harsh words to someone that you care about or your children. You know, it could be the tone, and that tone, because usually when you give off a certain tone, especially with domestic violence, a person will say, you know what, this person is serious. They're not playing around. I better knock it off, you know, because they're serious now. And, you know, I'm quite sure you guys, you know, you've been in situations with friends and, you know, you're joking around and you say something about maybe their hair or their shoes or something, you know, and they'll say, wait a minute, you're taking it too far. Like, okay, you said your joke. Now back off, because now everything else is mean to me. So our words have a lot of meaning behind it. Sometimes we know what it means. Like someone gives you the finger. They're like, oh, I gave him the bird. People know what the bird means. Or if you know, you say the F word. People know what the F word means. They know it's not a fun word. It can't mean, okay, this is going to be fun. You know, so when you say certain things, it has a trigger point in people's minds of past situations that they've been through, and it'll strike them like, wait a minute, are you talking to me? That type of thing. I'll give you an example. Today, I was talking to an attorney and I said to him, I believe that you're trying to brush me off, because he says, you know, okay, oh, okay. And I'm like, I feel like you're brushing me off. And he says, how dare you accuse me of such thing? I would never do that to anybody. I said, no, it's just your tone that was making me believe that, oh, okay, means like, okay, you said what you said, and okay, leave me alone now, lady, you know, get over yourself. That's how I took it. So that's what I mean when I say your tone and your words and in the manner that you say it in, it can be taken in the wrong way. And in fact, in domestic violence situations, there could be a husband and a wife or a boyfriend and girlfriend, and they're arguing. And, you know, it starts off playful and he'll start saying things and she'll start saying things. And before you know it, she said something about his mother, or he might have called her the B word. And she might have said, hey, your mother's the B word. And now it triggered. Now, this guy could have had a past domestic violence situation with his parents, and his dad may have been the abuser. And now, wait a minute, you're talking about my mom? Hold on. I'm about to, you know, get violent with you. Because no one talks about my mom. So this is what I mean about lighting the fire to domestic violence situations. Your choice of words has a lot to do with a lot of situations, unless you run into an abuser that's just an abuser and they're so beaten up on the inside that they just want to beat up the rest of the world on the outside. There are some people like that today as well. So be mindful that you may run into damaged goods out there where you may not say anything at all. And next thing you know, you're getting your cheek slashed. Why? Because you looked at me the wrong way. You know, eye movement, a lot of things can transpire. So it's best to be mindful, not, you know, stare at the ground when you walk, but don't necessarily give someone the evil eye. You know, it's like the evil eye you give your kids when you're out. You're like, they know they're not supposed to be jumping around. You give them that eye and they're like, oops, mommy was like, uh-uh, this is not what we do. So eye movement has a lot to do with it as well, where you don't even have to open your mouth to say anything to the person, the kids, you know, strangers you don't even know. You don't have to say anything. And that has a lot to do with road rage. You're driving down the street, you're minding your business, and then you cut someone off, not by choice, but because you almost missed your exit. Next thing you know, you're reading about the person that got shot in the head because they cut someone off on the highway. This has a lot to do with domestic violence situations today. I'm actually waiting on Ed to give us a call in so we can talk about his particular situations and how this, you know, domestic violence situation in his household has done some things to his life. And hopefully we can find out, you know, he's on the line. What do you know? Hey there, Ed, how are you?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm fine. I was just giving our guests a brief synopsis of, you know, domestic violence and things that could lead up to it. And sometimes people who are victims of domestic violence, they don't ever know that they're victims of domestic violence. So it's a lot of trigger points. We spoke briefly about your situation, about being someone that was a victim of domestic violence. And I wanted to ask you, you know, just a brief synopsis of things going back to childhood that you may have went through. Like,
well,
tell me.
I'll tell you what I remember. I remember it was chaotic in the household, and a lot of it was mainly verbal. There was a lot of things that at that time I didn't understand what was really going on, far as with my father, the drinking and other things that he had, you know, problems that he had and things that he was going through. I had to really search back deep into his childhood to get a clear understanding of how he grew up to how he became the man that he is. Wasn't a bad man, don't get me wrong. And I'm not here to throw my dad under the bus. But I will say this, as a kid coming up, it was the verbal, a lot of times the abuse was over abuse. What I mean by it is if he did something in school, I did something that was wrong and whatever, he would come home screaming like a maniac, or the gut would come out. Or it was just an overabundance amount of getting a whooping. I got whooping plenty of times. Rather it was for a report card, or rather it was because of peeing the bed, which I peed the bed until I was 17 years old, believe it or not. And I got my mind tore up behind it. And a lot of, you know, what people don't understand about abuse is a lot of times I didn't understand what it was at the time. I thought, you know, I did something wrong, I get a beating. But my beatings wasn't normal. They weren't normal at all. They were like hardcore, like crazy beatings for the belt with my clothes off. So me and my older sister experienced getting beat, getting abused verbally and physically as far as with a belt is concerned. As we grew up, I learned more about abuse. I started looking for the signs, and I was more aware. But what I wasn't aware of is when I was starting to holler at my kids, the same way he was hollering at me. I never beat my kids, but I was screaming at them like a maniac, like I was a raging maniac. And I had to sit back and check myself and say, what am I doing? And I believe one of my kids said something to me about it. Said, you can't talk to them kids like that. They're older now. You can't do that. And that kind of was the wake-up call for me. And I think by her saying that and by me just having a reality check with myself, kind of like, it really helped me out a lot.
So let me ask you this, Ed. You came from a two-parent household, right?
Excuse me?
You grew up in a household with your mom and your dad.
With both my parents.
Okay, so when your dad was doing all of these things, like what did your mom say? Like how did she intervene?
My mother said to me at one time, "Well, what was I at?" But she don't really remember. It's things that went on in the house that my sisters don't even know about that I know. as far as abuse that has happened with my mom. And, you know, they don't even know. I never even shared it with them. I never even talked about it with them. I just knew, I thought once I got old enough to deal with him, I was going to deal with him. And I told my mother's brothers, one of them, the story about it. And, you know, he kind of like, deterred me from, you know, doing anything crazy. And then, you know, a lot of people don't understand that. A lot of people don't like talking about stuff like this because they're afraid how people are going to look at them, and they're going to be judged, and he's lying, and or she's lying, or I'm just one of the guys out there that don't really mind talking about. I didn't think I could even talk about. But
well, I'm glad that you could talk about it with me. I really appreciate that, Ed. And also, I wanted to ask you, like, what stopped you from saying, you know what, I was abused by my dad, and I'm not going to do anything in retaliation to him? Like, what stopped you? Because anybody can say, hey, listen, Ed, don't do it. But if Ed wanted to do it, Ed could have done it. So what stopped you?
I believe one of my uncles said something to me about it. And I believe that really deterred me from going all the way with it. Because I always promised myself once I got of age that I was going to deal with him. Not only because of what he did to me and my sister, but what he did to my mom. That they never got a chance to see, but I seen his hand. And it's crazy that you said that, because up until this point now, as we speak now, an incident had occurred where he was talking to somebody and we all sat down and talked about it. And he must have mentioned something about he's afraid to do something, because I'm afraid that something with my wife, because I don't want to go to jail. That he's afraid he don't want to go, something he didn't want to do because he's afraid he might go to jail. I guess insinuating that he's going to hit my mom. And I said he would have to never worry about making it to jail, because, you know, it'd be a totally different situation. I'm not young no more, so I would deal with it a different way. And, you know, so all that stuff, like, people don't understand that what it has done to me is, for me, I can't speak for nobody else who's been abused, but what it did to me is I don't trust. It's hard for me to love a woman the way I need to love her. It's a lot that comes with it, and that's how I was affected by it. I can't speak for nobody else who, and then I don't handle nobody hollering at me very well. So a lot of times I'm not even around nobody who has to holler at me. I'm not around. I'm really alone. I'm always by myself.
So, Ed, how do you handle being an abused child by your own parent? Like, how do you handle that with your own kids today?
How did I handle it with my own kids?
Yes, because, you know, usually they say abusers, it's like a line, and it runs down the DNA of, okay, I was abused, and now I'm an abuser. Like, how did you move forward with your children where you didn't become your dad?
Well, I never hit my kids. I don't know what had happened between, you know, me from, you know, from out of that stage to into with me with my kids. I never hit my kids. I always talked to them, but I was screaming at them. So it kind of rubbed off on me to that degree. I was screaming at how. And again, like I said before, I kind of caught myself along with somebody telling me that you can't holler at them kids like that because they're grown now. And that conversation that they had with me versus when I'm upstairs thinking about it deterred me away from screaming and howling at them like that.
So this affects your love life going forward because of the trauma that you suffered as a kid. How do you handle women that come into your life and want to settle down, and you're like, what do? You push them away?
I don't love hard. My love comes differently. It comes in a way where I'm a great supporter. I'm a great provider, you know, but I'm always got my foot about to climb out the window, one foot out the window, one foot in the bedroom. Because I don't ever know. I'm so leery of of rejection, it just makes me feel uncomfortable because of what I've been through. And a lot of people will never understand it. And maybe some people who've been through it do, and maybe some people don't. Everybody got their own story, and everybody are affected different ways behind it. And so peeing the bed probably was one of mine. So, I mean, that came a long way to just peeing the bed because I was scared. Every time he came home, he was fired up for the most part of it. And he was, you know, screaming and howling because I had friends at the table playing cards. And it's funny because me and my friends talk about it today. I'm talking about childhood friends. And we remember it like it was yesterday.
So do
you never
feel
forget him because of how loud he was and how aggressive he was.
Do you feel a little embarrassed sometimes around your friends knowing what you went through and they had to witness this type of stuff?
Well, I never felt embarrassed about it. More scared. I mean, I never know who was going to walk in the door. Because maybe my mom called him and people might be saying to you, you know what? He had a bad report card. He deserved to get his behind whipped. He was out past 10 o'clock. He deserved to get his behind whipped. He was fighting in school. He deserved to get his behind whipped. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is the whippings were overbearing. So he stopped him, but he got tired. I know what a normal whipping is, and I know what a whipping that's overbearing is. And I suffered overbearing whippings. And that's why I called it abuse. I didn't know it was abuse at the time, but when I got older, I knew it was abuse.
And if you could turn back the hands of time, because you know you're a parent, and you know kids get into things when they're young and they want to do stuff, especially little boys. Little girls are a little bit milder, calmer. But do you think having children of your own, and you could look back in time and say, "Wow, I did that as a kid," or "I didn't do that as a kid, but I was reprimanded for doing that as a kid." You ever look at your kids and do a comparison of the things maybe that you have done as a child and got reprimanded for them?
Well, I look at my kids now and I love the way how they handle their kids. There's nothing like, you know, how I was handled. I'm in all their lives tremendously. And I'm in all my grandkids' lives tremendously, you know. So I watch them how they raise them. I watch the things they say. And if they say do something that I think that's above and beyond, I'll just say something like, you know, you can't scream at them. You got to talk to them. Or you can't do this. You got to, like, you can't do that. You got to, you know. So.
Because, Ed, this abuse was such a long time ago. And I'm kind of thinking back in those days, they didn't have, like, DHS. You know, Division of Youth and Family Services, no one came out. So if you went to school with bruises or torn skin, people kind of looked at it and was like, yeah, this kid got in trouble last night. So it wasn't like it was a system that would protect kids such as yourself. You know, you guys didn't have that back then.
It was unheard of. I never heard of DHS back at that time. And, you know, it was things that went on in the household that you never even talked about. Some of our friends knew how he was because they were there. They seen it. They witnessed it. They didn't witness the physical part of it. They witnessed the verbal part of it.
So how do you see yourself today as being now a father, a great father, a wonderful grandfather to your grandkids? How do you see yourself today, you know, explaining to your grandchildren, because now they're coming up and they're going to make mistakes. It's going to happen. How do you find yourself telling them, listen, you made a mistake or they did something wrong? What would be a way of reprimanding them where you don't have to yell or, you know, pull out the belt?
Well, we use different tactics today. We're going to take the game away from you. You're not going to go to, you're not going to play football. We're going to take the football away from you. Because these are things they love doing the most, as you know. You know, the video games are a high commodity. Everybody likes playing video games. So we'll take that away from you. We'll take the, we're going to play football. They go berserk over that because they love football, because they're all on teams. Or go to your room. Here or there, somebody will get spanked. But again, it was nothing like what I endured.
So do you think the way a person's tone could be to like a loved one or a child could make a difference, you know, in how you come across and what their actual response would be? Do you think that really matters today?
Well, I will say this. People raise their kids differently, and I'm not here trying to tell nobody how to raise their kids. You know, you do what you feel like you know that you have to do as a parent. There's nothing that comes that tells you how to raise a kid. You just do the best that you can. I just don't think that hitting is the answer. And I also don't believe screaming top of your lungs is not the answer. Sometimes we get frustrated, and that's what brings out the yelling, the abuse of screaming. They don't look at it as abuse, but it is. It's verbal abuse. And to you, you don't feel like it is because it's all normal in your household. It's just normal that you got to holler at them, scream at them, and all that. But that works on a kid. And later on, the kid may take it with him as he gets older into a relationship or with his kids.
Well, let me ask you, do you think that a form of punishment for a young man growing up, let's say if a son 15 years old does something wrong and you're like, give me 200 push-ups, do you feel like that could be a form of abuse, or is that like a good way to reprimand them?
Like I said before, you know, everybody has their own way of raising their kid, and who am I to judge anybody about whether they're going to have their kid do 100 push-ups or whether they're going to send them to the room? Some people might say sending them to the room is too soft. Somebody might say, well, taking a game away from them might be too soft. You need to put a strap to them, or you need to spank them, or you need to do this, or you need to do that. Everybody's household is totally different. So I don't have all the answers as far as saying, okay, well, 100 push-ups is too much for a kid. That's abuse. Why would you do that? Who am I to say that?
Right.
I can't do that. Everybody got their own way. My way may not be the best way, and they may not agree with my way. I may not agree with their way, but everybody got their way. But if I see something out of the norm, I will say something to them about it.
And do you feel like, you know, being a child that was abused, like you had mentioned about how it affects your relationships with, you know, another female, and your trust level, do you feel like you're doing more damage when you're in a relationship that for a woman that says, you know, I really love you, I really want you to trust me, I want to be with you? How do you take that trust issue that you have and say, I'm going to open up and I'm going to actually let you in so you can see the real me and see my scars? How do you open up to a woman, and have you broken any hearts because of the abuse that you suffered?
Well, I got somebody who I love to death. I really love this woman. But again, you know, I'm always on pins and needles. She's on pins and needles as well. I mean, she had some situations going on with her too as well. So, not like mine's, but, you know, but she has similarities. And for me, it's kind of, you know, it's hard for me to love. I was never shown in my household how to love. Me and my sisters, we all struggle with that. And that's probably why we can't hold on to you know, significant others. We lack in it. And I don't know. I think that the abuse part, it was so much chaotic in there. It was never shown. It was more of that than it was anything. I'm not saying that they did not love us. But I am saying to you is it was just never shown how to love somebody.
Well, do you
my
think
my mother the other day?
Do you think said, that? Do you think that you could possibly love again, like learn to love and want to love and want to share your battle wounds with someone that is going to be like honest with you, accept you for who you are, truly love you? How do you pick up the pieces and move forward to the tip of your fingernail of trust where you can say, I'm going to trust you wholeheartedly? Or will you ever be open to that?
Well, I'm learning how to be open to that. I'm working on that. She doesn't even know I'm talking about this now as we speak. I mentioned it to her before, but never talked about it. Never sat her down and talked about it. I mentioned us not knowing how to love, don't know how to love. And I threw it at her. I didn't talk to her about it. Just kind of blew it at her. And but moving forward with her is it's to be honest with you, it's a beautiful thing. I'm learning how to love. I'm learning more about myself because I got somebody finally that I really, really care for, like head over heels for her. Like there's a lot of things I used to do I don't even do no more. Like that's another story, but I'm a totally different person now. Totally different. All I owe that all to her because she's showing me that you can love. You can, because she shows it abundantly, like overwhelmingly she shows it. Like there's no denial, it's no disguised. She showed me that she really loved me and really care about me. So it helps me moving forward. It's helped me develop into being learn how to love her, and the small things, and it's the small things that count. It's this, you know, remembering the anniversaries, remembering the birthdays, and all of those things that come along with loving somebody, and caring about somebody. You know, so she's helped me out a lot.
Do you feel like a piece of you was stolen from what happened to you years ago? Like something was stolen from you because. It's like you love your dad, you know, growing up, you love your parents. And it's like when this abuse started and you got older and you realized what it really was and you realized the hurdles that you had to go through, do you ever feel like something has been stolen from you, like a part of you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I felt like we got robbed of not knowing how to love. We all three of us got robbed of that.
And now that you're learning to love,
they never said that.
And now that you're learning to love, what kind of feeling is it that now you're saying, okay, I'm breaking free, I'm feeling good? Like, what kind of feeling do you feel in your heart?
It's a beautiful feeling once you let go totally. It's a beautiful feeling. It's doing things with her that I never did before with previous significant others, learning how to share. I can feel it. I can feel it. Like I feel if something's not going right. I feel my stomach not like I don't like that feeling. And I always proud myself. I will never get that way. I always hear other people talking about it. You know, when you hurt, when a woman is hurt, you get that knot in your stomach and you just, it's just an awful feeling. I said, it's never going to happen to me.
You know, Ed, sometimes when people go through certain things in life, there's trigger points. What are some of the things that could trigger you to like having a flashback of like something bad is going to happen and you're in a heated argument? And what actually triggers you to like resort back to going into that shell?
when I hear, maybe I might hear my daughter holler at her son. That might have triggers. She probably never even realized it or even know. But both of my daughters, they kind of scream at their sons a little. And they are hard-headed, and you know, they young men, and they kind of growing up without dads. They got father figures in their life, but they're growing up without dads. So there's a lot of pressure on them. So when I see them howling and screaming at them, that's the trigger right there for me. It just makes me just feel uncomfortable when I see it, but I don't show it. I just don't feel comfortable for me at all. That's the trigger. That, and if I'm being hollered at, screamed at. What I mean by that is, a business venture came up. Somebody was telling me something. I said, "Well, you really shouldn't do that because how do you?" And he went ballistic. Well, how are you going to tell me what to do? And I kind of like, that was a trigger for me, because you didn't have to scream at me to get your point across. Just tell me what it is that's on your mind, and we can get through it. But when you screamed at me, triggered.
So how do you communicate with your daughters to say, "Hey, listen, you need to find a different way of reprimanding him versus screaming at him, because you know what kind of trauma it could lead to potentially." Like, what do you intervene when they start, you know, yelling at the kids?
Well, first of all, my daughters don't have a clue about my lifestyle from beginning even to current. They know I do carpet. They know I got businesses. They know I got them in the real estate. They know all those wonderful things. But they didn't know much about my childhood, only what their mothers told them, what they knew. My daughters, I try to talk to her, and, it's too hard on them. And he don't listen, Dad. He don't. So I get that. And again, who am I to try to tell them? I try to guide them, but I never, they are in a situation where they got these boys and they're raising them on their own. There's no father around. Like I said, again, there are father figures around who are helping them do the best that they can with for them. But I what am I saying? Don't holler at them. Don't scream at them. Because all they're going to tell me is, "Dad, he don't listen. He need to take them with you." Or they get too. They're not patient enough to deal with them. Let me just say that. A lot, they lose a lot of patience dealing with them. And I understand. I really do. I can look at the whole situation with both of them, and I can sit back and say, "I understand. I know there's a lot of pressure on you. I know it's going to be times where you just need a break." And I see it all the time.
And Ed, while you're on today, I just got a text message from a gentleman that said he really appreciated hearing what you've been through, and his heart is totally compassionate. And you made him realize that verbal abuse is also very real. And he'd like to thank you for bringing awareness to also verbal abuse.
Well, here's the thing about that. From verbal abuse, being raped, people don't like to talk about that stuff. And a lot of times, I want to talk about it because I want to inspire others who've been through it to come forward and just tell your story. I mean, everybody has a story. I don't care who you are. Everybody got a story. And it's just tell them, just be straight with it. Be real with it. I'm just here for the people to let them know what I've been through. Everybody's story is different, and I have some signs suffering because of it. We all do. Talking about my siblings, we all have signs of what we've been through and we suffer from it. It's not that bad, but it's bad enough where it kind of affects you moving forward in life to a degree.
Right. Well, Ed, I'd like to thank you for coming on the show today. And I know we're going to have tons of questions from our guests, listeners that are on. It's about 9 million people listening to you today. And I would like to say thank you for coming on. And I would definitely like to have you back on the show.
I wouldn't mind. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Okay. Definite, Ed. Thank you so much. And we'll talk soon.
Okay.
Okay. Bye now.
All right. Bye-bye.
I tell you. Oh, man. That was really, really, really deep, guys. I got so many texts while Ed was on, and I can't answer them right now, of course, because I'm on the air. But this was a really deep conversation to have with Ed today. And to all of, and I'll say, because I'm not going to go make it one-sided, to all the men and the women out here today, you don't know what a person has been through, such as myself, where I shared my domestic violence story with you, things that you would have never, ever imagined that happened to me, you know, with someone I trusted, I married, I took vows with. You don't know. And by me being in that marriage and seeing the trigger points of, you know, coming in past, you know, if I'm supposed to be in at 6 and I get in at 6:05, you know, I got to drop my pants and let them smell my underwear to make sure, you know, I wasn't doing anything I wasn't supposed to be doing. You know, it's a lot of things. And I don't know his past relationships, my crazy ex-husband, ex-cop letter A. I don't know the past abuse that he endured. I just got a pinch of it from what I seen, you know, with the mother getting kicked down the stairs and, you know, the abuse he did to my own child. You're dealing with someone that has past abuse situations that has happened to them. You don't know how to handle them, especially if the situation is unknown to you. So you don't know really what you're getting yourself into unless the person opens up to you. And like Ed says, his kids, they have no idea what he's been through as a child. This is something that has been in his soul. He has interior scars of being abused by not only just his dad, but a man that he trusted, a man that he looked up to. You know, these are the things that happen. And people have skeletons that they're just afraid to let out, because sometimes when you open up to people, it happens. They use your past against you, and then they abuse you because you don't know that they are abused as well. They use your past as a weapon against you to say, aha, I know this about you, and I'm telling the world about you. Not knowing how much damage it can do to you, and having that trigger point of now, as Ed says, I have a trust issue. Like, I can't trust anyone more than a fingernail and like a little nib of a fingernail. But I'm learning to trust. I'm learning to love again, because I met someone who's just as honest as me, who has went through some things. She has battle wounds. She has skeletons in her closet. She has a past that the world doesn't know about, somewhat to his. So you have someone who can acknowledge being an abused individual, be it from a former marriage, from your parents abusing you, from verbal abuse. Verbal abuse is also very damaging. And Ed brought that to light because he found himself yelling at his kids how he was yelled at. And sometimes when you have that type of behavior and you lash out at someone else because of the lashes that you had to take, it can be harmful to your health and to the other person that you're abusing. And that's why I wanted to know from Ed, being as though you were abused, are you a potential abuser? And he may not acknowledge it, but it's probably been some women down the line that have come into his life, fell in love, and he just didn't know how to love them because he was never shown love as a kid. And that's why when you have kids today, grab them, hold them, hug them, tell them how much you love them. Even if they do something bad, they got a bad report card, they didn't do the dishes, they didn't make their beds right, just let them know, listen, no one's going to tell you this, but you're going to hear it from me first. I love you. The three words that can brighten anybody's day is those three words. I love you. And sometimes when people say, I love you, they don't even mean it. They say it because they know that this is a word that you're going to want to hear and they're going to share with you regardless of the circumstances. If you're angry, you're yelling, guess what? I still love you. It may be hard because arguments can be emotional. And the only word left to say is, I don't like you. I hate you. The H word, I hate you. You know, I didn't want to be with you anyway. Or I didn't want to have you anyway. If you're talking to a child, I should have never had you. Those type of words that you say to children, you know, and they grow up and they become kids like Ed, who is now an adult, and they grow up with the scars. So you leave your kids with battle wounds, even if you're dead and gone. You have this child out here with battle wounds because you never showed them love and you never said, I love you. When you say good things, it costs you nothing. It's actually for free. It's actually for free to make someone else feel good, regardless if you're having a heated argument, if you really got married and you didn't want to be married. You know, guys do it all the time. They'll go out there, they'll screw around, they'll come back home. Oh, I messed up. I'm going home and tell my wife I love her, how much I love her. Because you realize what you did out there wasn't worth it anyway. So you're back home now and you're giving her the three words that's going to turn that whole situation around by saying, I love you. And women also, they go out there, vice versa, shoes on the other foot. They do things, you know, and then they'll come back and they'll tell, you know, their other half, I love you. And either guy will say, oh, whatever, you know, you can't love me. The way that you spoke to me was so disrespectful and all this other stuff. You know, it happens. So guys are less receptive to those three words. But if you're trying to smooth something over, you're going to say, I love you. Maybe bring some flowers home, candy, take her out to dinner, something like that. Women are more receptive to I love you because we really believe it when you say those words, because we trust that you're saying those words in all honesty. When in fact, we've had a knockdown fight, I have a black eye, you're missing a tooth, and then, you know, we have the I love you at the end. You know, and these things lead to domestic violence situations. And these domestic violence situations can lead to very bad situations. And I'm very thankful that Ed came on today to share his story. And hopefully other guys and women will open up, come on, share your story, let us know what you're going through. Maybe we can help. You know, sometimes it helps when you can clear the air of everything that you're going through in life and you got us to talk to. We're here every Tuesday, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Same bat time, same bat channel. I look forward to seeing you all next week. Have a good night. Tommy Torres signing off.
You're listening to It's Confirmed with Tomiko Torres, only on LA Talk Radio.